You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the last episode of Clock Radio Speakers for 1-2015. I'm your host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, you should definitely follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast, or you can go directly to our website at clockradiospeakers.com that has our SoundCloud, our Facebook, also has it to where you can subscribe to us in iTunes, SoundCloud. Did I say SoundCloud? Probably.
Say it again.
Say it again for the people in the back. So subscribe to us. Any place where you can vote or talk about us or tell other people how much you enjoy the show, do that. That would be great. The more eyes on us, the more visibility, the more, the more we appreciate it. And the more, because we're trying to stay alive. Yeah, we're trying to stay alive, especially around Dirty Cats. We want to be so good that we revive Grantland. Mm. I think that's a resolution for 2016.
Grantland's not coming back, though. I know.
All right. Well, maybe we'll end up on like talk radio or something like that. Get on AM radio or something.
Oh man, can you even imagine? We definitely need a soundboard if we're on talk radio.
Oh, I'm trying to get you to get a soundboard here for the last 2 years.
I'm lazy. I try to keep my editing for this show as simple as possible.
Listen, it could just be a live soundboard. I just need something that I can connect to my keyboard. K is a flex bomb, A is a Jamaican horn, Z is some Swiss whistles, etc., etc.
You know, the problem is we get to a point where you'd like shift 9 has Ron Isley singing about, you know, big business, and then like, you know, control all, like you'd have so many, you'd need a whole separate thing. Like you just would be running out of space.
I would look like Scott Storch getting a haircut with like just mass amounts of keyboards with sound effects connected everywhere.
I think that could be my New Year's resolution for myself. Just record the podcast, but I'm so important. I have so little time to waste that my wife is just in here cutting my hair while we're recording the podcast.
That would actually be dope. That would be very Scotch Storch Khaled.
Right. The worst part would be the clipper noise, but you know.
Of course.
People sitting here listening. The hell is that buzzing? Anyway.
It's our buzz. We got the internet going nuts. That's why. Ugh. Pow-wow, baby.
You didn't slur your word enough. Pow-wow.
Pow-wow. I just say pow-wow because it's P-O-W-W-O-W. Pow-wow. Crazy. So what's up, man? What's going on?
Recovering after the holidays. It was good. Good trip up to Vermont and back. But, you know, after a while, I'm like, all right, I want to be in my bed.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
You know, agreed. I want my house. I want my, you know, I want to be able to know that when I go in my fridge, I know where things are. I sound like, you know, George Costanza or Jerry Seinfeld right now. I'm like, you know, the older you get, the more you want to like reduce the number of things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
Right. So planning for a trip is all about that. It's like, all right, I know if we leave at this time, we can stop here. Like it just becomes this whole like series of decisions. And like, cause I'm lucky enough. I had half of last week off. I've got all this week off. I can just like, so I just wanted to come back so I could theoretically relax. But you and I were talking about before we started recording. Unfortunately, I'm an idiot and I gave myself too much to do this week. So I don't really get much of a vacation out of my vacation. So that's
my story. But you know, we talk, it's the gristle. You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to do that.
Rise and grind, man.
Yeah. Rise and grind. Do people still tweet that? Remember when that was a thing on Twitter? Like 2012, people would really like rush to wake up early just to tweet rise and grind. Crazy. So
it's like, I got an idea. Why don't you get off Twitter in the morning? Anyway. We're not going to have the last episode of 2015 be about
2012.
I was going to say people who are fake inspirational on social media.
We probably need to do Twitter's cocaine part two. Mm. Twitter's evolved so much since then, but it's largely stayed the same, but it's different. You're right.
It's evolved. It stayed the same, but it's different.
It's different. That's fake deep. That's your... But this is what we do. This is actually my favorite podcast of the year.
Now, why is that?
Well, for one, I get a little nostalgic because, you know, this is like around anniversary time where, you know, we talked about it last week. I approached you with an idea of, hey, I think I wrote a blog the first time on my website about my favorite albums of the year. Yeah, and then you wrote your 10 as well. And then I think it might have been your idea, like, hey, let's do a podcast. And
I think it was your idea. I'm going to give you all the credit for this. I'm pretty sure. Because you were like, yeah, if we talk about it, then people will, you know, maybe when they want to listen. And it was like a one-off thing. And then it wasn't until like 8 or 9 months later that we were like, hey, let's do some more of these.
Let's do Watch the Throne.
Oh, Watch the Throne.
Let's do Watch the Throne. That's what kicked it off. And from there, it's been on and popping ever since. Yo, my mom asked me yesterday. She asked me if we still say tight. She's like, is that what you guys still say tight, right? And I forgot that we said tight. I forgot tight was a thing.
For a second, I thought you were going to say that your mom asked you if you could teach her how to dab. And I was just going to be like, oh, no.
Listen. No. No, I muted dab on Twitter. I just hate when like something becomes one thing. And then maybe I'm the old guy now because I'm like, wait, that looks like somebody's doing cocaine off their arm. That's how I know I'm the old guy.
I mean, yes, but when you're really the old guy is when like it's Christmas next year and you show up and you want your young nephews to teach you how to dab. Like that's when you're really old.
Look, when I saw Stevie Wonder dabbing, I was good.
Has Hillary done it yet? Because we need her on a talk show real fast.
She'll probably be Dougie in or something. She'll do something that's just like a little too late.
That's really too late.
Just enough to be like, just enough for people to remember, like, is she doing the Soulja Boy?
Soulja Boy.
But not something like stupid old. She's not like doing a Cabbage Patch or the Running Man or something. She's doing something that's just enough.
She's trying to be really early on the 06-07 retro kick. It's like, is Black Mags her entrance music? Like, what's going on? You know, like,
that's not gonna be. Listen, when 06 and 07 pops, it's gonna be Party Like a Rock Star, skull shirts, and rope chains.
And that Jim Jones is just gonna be like, I've been waiting this whole time.
he has like this section behind his closet where he likes like this. It like retina scans his face. Welcome back, Mr. Jones. And then like his closet completely 180s and there's just a bunch of rope chains, fitted thermal shirts and like True Religion jeans with white stitching.
Oh. I have a real...
I bet you Jeezy has a bunch of red monkey jeans just waiting.
Can you believe I went back and listened to the 2 Jeezy projects this year for this podcast?
God bless you.
I'm making some real... He put out a mixtape.
Oh, right.
And then he put out that album.
Nah, Jeezy was your guy. So I kind of like, the thing about the Jeezy project was that it was so, it wasn't even good or bad. It was just it just didn't.
It was it was aggressively mediocre.
Yeah. Like it was really, nah. Yeah, so I didn't even bother listening to the Jeezy. But I did go back and listen to some of the projects. I've been getting on you about doing a retrospective of projects that we reviewed or talked about earlier in the year.
Yeah.
So I started working on my top 10 list, and I didn't even announce that, but this episode is our year-end top 10 albums of 2015. But first, in order to get there, I think I started putting the list together around July. And I went back maybe 3 weeks, 2-3 weeks, and begin listening to projects that we have reviewed earlier in the show. Just, you know, I'm a time guy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors that go into, you know, listening to music, what's going on in your life, what the weather's like, et cetera, et cetera. And you may hear things wrong, or you may hear things a little too right. You may overrate some things. So there's a few projects that I think we talked offline that we both listened to, and you know, we want to circle back around and discuss them and see, you know, they could have possibly ended up on the list, or they could be just as if we originally reviewed them. So is there anyone in particular that like stuck out to you in a good way that maybe you didn't like when you first heard it, but then, you know, you heard it, you went back and listened to it again and you were like, hey, wait a minute, it's kind of dope.
You know, I didn't give enough credit to and I'm sort of revealing a little bit from what we're going to talk about, you know, at the back half of this episode. But The Game put out some good music this year.
Yes, he did.
He has a severe editing problem, right? Like, not mixing. I mean, editing. Like, Documentary 2 was 19 tracks, and then there was 2.5. Somewhere in that 30, 40 tracks. There's actually like a really, really good album.
Yes.
I don't think he 100% got it, but you know, he needed somebody to help him thin this down to like a cohesive, like nothing but great songs. But there's a lot of good songs between those two.
There are. And I actually know people who prefer it as is. I had some conversations because when I went back and listened to this, both discs, I was like, yo, this is really, really dope. And I was asking people like, hey, you know, what records would you cut? What's wrong with this? Is it too many records? And you're the only one who was like, you know, he could do more with less. Most people who like this album like it for what it was. They may not like every song on the album, but I didn't hear anybody calling, hey, I could have totally did without this record or that record, which was...
I think part of that, too, is just the way that music is changing. The way that artists' relationship with their fans is changing. I think in both good and bad ways. I think streaming is completely altering... streaming's been around for a while, right? Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't anything that new. But it is now mainstream. And it is now, you know... And part of that is Spotify. Part of that is that, you know... I feel like Apple Music, like doing all the promotion they've done has like, I feel like it's sort of started there a little bit, but really, you know, there's been this trend for a while. You and I have talked about it. We have this never ending debate on the show about what is a, like an album? What is a mixtape? What is this? Like
yep.
3 years ago, Documentary 2.5 would have been the free mixtape that was released a month before.
Yep.
But you don't need to do that anymore.
Yep.
We saw it from Drake. We saw it from Pusha. We saw it from Ross. We saw it from Game. Like, you can enough people are now subscribing to at least one streaming service. And not everybody. Like, there are lots of people, never mind who buying CDs. Like, there are lots of people who just, they don't do that yet, right? They don't subscribe to streaming because it doesn't work for them, or they don't want to pay the $10 a month or whatever. Excuse me. But there are enough people now that it doesn't make sense to keep, you know, there's all sorts of complicating things, like do you have to clear samples, everything else, but all things being equal, you might as well try to get it on there because you can get some money from it.
Right.
And so we are now entering an era of sort of, you want music? I'm giving you music, right? So now we used to have the opposite problem, right? Where we would be like fiending for new stuff. And an album would come out, and then thanks to the internet, right, we at least were like, oh, well, this was a side B when the single got released 3 months later and it didn't make the album. So this is a special song. Like, this is an extra song, right? And sometimes it's because this, you know, couldn't clear the sample, or sometimes it was because, you know, they were trying to make a certain kind of sound and this didn't fit. But these things were so rare, it was like, oh, you know, and you were able to get them. Sometimes it would be like, oh, well, the only version I had DJ Clue screaming on it. You know, like you had those sort of records. You don't have that anymore.
Right.
It's all out there. At the very least, it's going to end up on SoundCloud somewhere.
Yep.
So I'm not at all surprised to hear people say that. Like, I am definitely somebody who've, like, not even just with music, but with life. Like, I firmly believe that, like, editing is super important. Like, it's easy to just give out everything. It's really hard to pare something down and be able to tell your fans or your audience or whoever you're selling to be able to say, this is my product. It's harder to do that.
Yeah.
I find value in artists who can do that well.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who, they were just like, no, it's clear that, and look, they might be right. There's lots of evidence that this is very difficult to do. So if this is not something you're good at, just give them everything.
Or there's just an idea where they like everything and think that you need to hear everything.
Sure. That's right. Sure. That's, yeah. Okay. I guess that's one way to go. I wouldn't put it. I mean, that's not how I would ever. I mean,
right. I don't think that.
But you're right. Maybe there are people who are fans of the game in that way. Like, I'm not even going to joke. That never even crossed my mind until just now, that there are people who are big enough fans of the game that they're literally like, no, every song that he makes, I want to hear. But there are totally people like that. There must be. There are people who are like that for every artist. Artists you have never even heard of. Armand, there are probably people like that for you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, absolutely. Of course, there are people like that for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. These are the people who are going to be sitting there like, I should try to hack Doc's Dropbox. I don't have everything. Don't do it. Anyway,
Yeah. There's some people who, like, I bet you somebody has tweeted Game today and asked him for new music.
That's just, it just seems impossible to me. He gave us too much.
But
I know
too much is relative.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. And so I think Drake is always used in this example as somebody who's used SoundCloud very well. I think Ross has started to use SoundCloud very well also. Right. But like,
Ross gave us a lot of music too. So what was the difference between Black Dollar, Black Market, the Lucy's off of SoundCloud and what Game did? Is it the fact that he paced it out?
I think that's actually part of it. Although Ross really did concentrate it towards the end of the year. But
right.
Yeah, Game's thing was kind of interesting. They came out the same week, right? Or was it one after another?
One after the other.
And 2.5 came out second, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the mistake. Like, yeah, you don't come out with, like, Documentary 2 is clearly the better album by far. Not even close.
You're not even a West Coast dude, though. Like, they're two totally different albums.
That's interesting.
They're two totally different albums. 2.5, like, come on, man. Like, he's got Quick on there.
That's a bad, like, Quick song.
You're crazy. You're crazy. Nah. 2.5, I can't even compare the two because the things that are good and bad about them are the same, pretty much the same things. It's just the songs are different. And 2 has more notable, so your Drakes and your Futures, et cetera, et cetera. And then 2.5 is more, again, like, it's more West Coast.
Anyway, so we're talking about, so the difference between something like Game and Ross. I mean, I don't think that Ross is particularly using SoundCloud well. He's just using it. I mean, to me, he's using it well because he's using it to give me songs of his I want to hear. Like, if he was using SoundCloud to give me more trap, more Meek Millish records, I don't want to hear that.
More BMFs.
I don't need BMF 2005. Like, that's not from 2005. It's version 2005. Like, I don't need that from him. So I think there's a difference between, like, and again, you know, now we're really sort of getting not nerdy, but like, this is what we do on Cloud Greatest. Because, like, I think there's a, like, I can be a fan of Rick Ross and say, hey, I'm glad that he puts out the type of music that I want on his SoundCloud. So I like his SoundCloud. But then I still think that nobody uses this sort of release strategy better than Drake because he is having it both ways. He is using stuff like SoundCloud and Apple Music specifically because he's got the deal with them. He is using that to create the illusion that he's sharing all this music with you, when in reality, they are still carefully timed mini events. He's not just dumping stuff out there. In the lead up to a project, he's not just putting a new song in his SoundCloud every week, right? Drake is really good at using these new forms of getting music to fans, but he's not doing the, here's everything I've ever done. Like, it's still a thing. Like, it's an event for Drake. You know what I mean?
I thought it was interesting that with something like OVO Sound Radio, Drake was able to be a part of the conversation without contributing to it.
Mm.
That makes sense. So he's playing records that he likes. He's playing records that he's obviously to be nice influenced by.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he doesn't have to drop exclusives every week.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I thought that in terms of creating content, Drake did a very, very good job this year. Again, now it's to the point where it's like, and I text you this during, actually on Christmas Day, will we see Views from the Six drop All-Star Weekend?
I have no idea.
It's in Toronto.
Right.
And obviously Drake, I believe also Drake is dropping some sneakers that weekend. He's dropping, I think, the black OVO 10s that weekend. Maybe even the 8s. Maybe the 8s will come out later this year. But he's doing a lot that weekend. So sure. it would be smart of him to capitalize the fact that you have a relationship with the NBA of all organizations. Hey, let's leverage that, Apple Music and Nike, Jordan, and let's put out my album during that time. That makes too much sense. If he doesn't do that, it will be one of the few times I actually question the moves of his team.
See,
they've been very strategic in a good way this year.
Here's the thing. This is going to sound crazy, maybe. I don't think NBA All-Star Weekend is big enough for that. What I mean by that in terms of audience, like, for the people listening to this episode, all those things line up and that makes total sense. Like the Venn diagram of people who are like, yeah, I like the NBA. Yeah, I like hip hop. Yeah, da da da. Like that Venn diagram overlaps significantly. Drake's Venn diagram is much broader. Drake has a gigantic group of fans who don't care about the NBA. He will certainly do something. Does it have to be views from the six? I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
At this time, I think he's built up so much. You put out two loose projects, like now it's time for the album.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the album's right. It is time for the album. Drake is an interesting guy. Like he, you know, so I mean, I'm not going to give anything away. Like neither of his two projects were the best project of the year, right?
No.
But he dominated this year in a way that is very Drake-like. Like it has sort of come to be his sort of tradition during, even if it's a year where he doesn't release a quote unquote proper album, right? Even though if you're reading this, it's too late, might as well be an album.
It's an album.
Right. I know. He tries to say it's not, but yeah, what's the difference?
It got him closer to getting out of that deal with that. Don't tell me it's not. Don't get all artsy fartsy on me and say it's not an album.
Right. He has a habit of doing this though. You know, like whether it was the year where, you know, he just did all those guest appearances and was just killing everything that he was on, or
I don't know if he was killing everything he was on.
No. I'm saying in the past he's done it that way.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about leading up to if you're reading this, because he was mailing a lot of those verses in.
Yeah, you know, I think, and maybe this is because I'm a Drake fan, like there is still something like sometimes he can completely mail it in, but like, you know, he's on total cruise control for much of the future project, right?
Yeah, but I listened to that on the way to Michigan. That was really interesting.
But really interesting. Drake on cruise control is still better than many rappers.
Yeah, he had some struggle lines there too. Some about like you're a quarterback, leave it all in the past or something like that. Something he said, and I was like, huh?
He's always had. Sure about that?
Sure.
Really? You went with that one?
It's
huh?
not whack. It's just something where you just question somebody. Like it's your boy who is going to marry a girl who, you know, you may have seen in some compromising situations in the past, and he's like, "But I love her," and you're like, "You sure? All right, if that's what you're gonna do, I support you. But you know, just take an extra day to think about it." I'm terrible. All right. So,
if you're reading this, it's too late. Came out of nowhere. We did the whole like podcast about that, and we'll talk about that. I want to talk about that album like at the second half of this podcast. That's on my list.
Okay.
But that honestly was not, despite the fact that I think that might still be the only hip hop album that went platinum this year.
Yeah. Cause if Kendrick didn't go platinum, then nothing else did.
Right. So, what was I gonna say? Oh, so if your platinum album, the only platinum album in hip hop in a given year, isn't the, like, it's crazy. That's not the biggest like reason why why Drake was such a big like deal this year, right? The whole Meek thing is just still continues to be fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Because
you heard Meek took some shots and it leaked out.
You know, My dog, you know, when I had a dog, my dog would wake up every morning and would want to, you know, use the bathroom. My cat wakes up every day and wants to be fed. You know, 5 o'clock rolls around, I start getting hungry every day. And when Meek wakes up, he wants to take shots at Drake. Like, that's what Meek does.
I mean, but it wasn't, he just said he was going to, he said something about put the gun to you or something like that. That's all. I'm like, he did all that. And well, I mean, you know what? If somebody did that to my career, I probably would want to shoot him too.
Except Meek did it to himself.
He did. He did. Now, what was the point you were going to make about me? Because I kind of messed up your transition.
Oh, no, I'm a little scatterbrained right now anyway. I mean, the whole like Meek really thought that like he was going to be able to play that like real hip hop card and that people would care. If anything, like we took a break this summer. Our first episode back, I think we sort of broke down this whole scenario. Like part of it was, yeah, Drake just handled it much better. And Drake even talked about it in that interview. Right. Was it Fader?
Yeah. Fader.
Where he took offense at how poorly Meek's team like handled it. Like they didn't respond. He was like, he felt like it wasn't a worthy fight almost. Right. But not even just that, like what it really, honestly, all it proves is that Drake's fan base was just, I think, almost way broader than Meek's team realized. You know, they thought they were going to be able to fall back on the, you know, get the angry rap heads, like the angry old rap heads, the people we talked about last week, and just even just regular rap fans. And that would be enough. But it's like, nah, actually, Drake's fan base is way bigger than that. Way bigger than that. That's, you know, not what, enough.
You know what it made me do? It made me consider something. Because we have these rules, and this is just a theory, and I'm not even ascribed to it, but I just wonder if it's true or not, if it has legs. So hip hop has these theories. You know, there's certain things that make hip hop, right? And that's with anything. Anything has certain characteristics, and in turn, those characteristics come together and largely make up a thing, an idea, whatever, whatever. But also, in many of those instances, those ideas evolve. Right. Okay. So I thought of the example of basketball, where there was a point where dunking was outlawed in the league. Then it became a dunk filled league, thanks to Dr. J and later on Dominique and Sean Kemp and guys like that. So to the point to where the previous ideas don't even matter anymore. So are we living in a time in 2015 where the real hip hop idea of I gotta write my own raps, yada yada yada. Like, does that hold the same weight that it did maybe 5 or 10 years ago? Have we just evolved where, has hip hop evolved to where that doesn't matter as much as some purists would believe that it should?
Two things. I think number one, it's sort of back to what we've been talking about lately on this podcast. I feel like we keep coming back to this. This notion of hip hop now encompasses multiple generations. I think the older generation cares more than the younger generation. But I also think the way that we all communicate with one another via social media now, where you get this, you tend to associate with like-minded people. You get this echo chamber, right? This is not all good things, right? Social media can be used for many great things, but like, this is one of the downsides. So like, if you are a real serious like hip hop fan who really cares about this stuff, then you're probably following similar people on Twitter, maybe even on Instagram. You're having conversations with similar people. You think that's still what matters? Like, it used to be that because in some ways there was a singular like hip hop culture. Like, if it didn't appear in the source, or if the artist in question didn't have a video on Rhapsody, they didn't exist. It was, you could be a fan and you could keep track of pretty much everything.
Yeah.
You cannot do that anymore.
Yeah.
There's way too much. That's great because there's a lot of opportunity, right? People don't necessarily have to go through the same gatekeepers they used to go through. In theory, people will break through who wouldn't have broken through before. But part of that is that everything's just bigger. So then, ironically, when things get bigger, what do people do? They really can only keep their eye on so much at a time. So they stay in their niche. So right. I think it's just that I'm sure it's entirely true that like for Meek's crew of people, like this stuff matters to them, or they thought that people would, I'm actually still not 100% sure if I think that Meek really cared about this, or if Meek thought that he could score points with people because he thought they would care about this. I haven't quite settled how I believe about that.
It came off very much like, I have the number one album in the country 2 weeks in a row. I finally made the turn. I've got the hottest chick in the game. I've got all this stuff going for me. I've got hit singles on my album. I've got this. I'm sure Dreams Worth More Than Money had just this plan to extend and catapult Meek into a different place. Right. So I think he was just feeling himself. That's at least how it came off. So he's like, you know what? I'm Teflon. Like, I can say this stuff. Let's start some stuff.
Well, he was mad. I mean, he was mad because clearly they wanted to do something with Rico, you know?
It's amazing. And I think we should just go ahead and talk about this Meek album. It's amazing how much of a layup that record was.
Yeah.
It's literally a Drake record. And like, he just like sent in the email. Hey, Meek, left 16 bars open for you. LOL. Hope everything works out. You know, take care, Drake.
Take care.
That's literally what Rico was. Like, I listened to it this weekend on the drive up to Detroit, and I was just like, This should be this should have killed the fall.
It was the it's the definition of the Drake stimulus package.
Absolutely, at its finest.
Right,
crazy.
Right, and it's weird to go back and listen to that record now.
It is.
It's like it's become the record that it's become the song that nobody talks about.
Yep.
Even though you're right, it should have been bigger.
Yep.
Me could have shut his mouth.
Yep.
But he felt that this was a thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I don't
know. So did you go back and listen to Meek's album?
I did.
What do you think?
The first couple songs, I'm like, you know, you're listening to it, you're like, yeah, this might be something, and then it just completely falls apart.
Yeah, I think the first half of this album was like they really top loaded this album.
Very top heavy. And then frankly, like, you know, Meek still hasn't 100%. Maybe he just doesn't care to, but he hasn't figured out how to like modulate his delivery in any way. Like when you get Meek, you get Meek, you know? And I don't know, like, I know that they were, I hate to use this term, but I have to use it because it's actually like technically accurate. I know they were urban radio like hits, but like his singles, I was not a fan of.
Yeah. Were they hits?
They did well.
You talking about the records with
Nicki? Yeah. The Nicki, was it Chris Brown, right?
Yeah. All Eyes on You or something
right.
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right. Because I remember when we talked about Meek's album, we were like, they should have put out the other one. Was it called Bad For You or something like that?
Also, not a really a great record, but at least I thought out of those two, those two, you know, the Meek album was an interesting case of like, of how we grew up thinking about albums. Like, clearly, like, you can tell that they were like, oh, we got to put these two chick records on the album. And I hate that term now, even though we used to use it all the time. Like, I realize now it's dumb. But like, I feel like that was the mindset they had when making this, oh, gotta have these two crossover records for Meek. So, you know, I feel like that was sort of the attitude with those. They stick out like a sore thumb.
I should have sent you this article on the Nicki stimulus package that I read, where it's basically like Drake's stimulus package is not nearly as big as Nicki's because, and I'm not,
you're not
it's
referring.
Not as big because, it's not as big because Drake normally gives the stimulus package to new artists, or maybe his peers, but he doesn't give the Drake stimulus package to bigger artists, at least not recently. Where Nicki, she only gives the Nicki stimulus package to pop artists, big artists, to where it's instantly going to go to, you know, pop radio. So I think that with those two records,
there's a Nicki stimulus package?
Yeah.
Nicki, who needed the Drake stimulus package for Truffle Butter? That Nicki?
That's not the Drake stimulus package. Truffle Butter is not a Drake record. That's a Drake feature. There's a difference between a Drake feature and a Drake stimulus
package. I have a singular definition of the Drake stimulus package.
Nah, feature.
No, hold
not
on. It's not. You didn't let me finish.
All right, go ahead.
Is it an OVO producer and is Drake on it? Those two things together, that is my working definition of the Drake stimulus package.
That's so broad.
19? Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Who did Truffle Butter?
1985.
Is he a part of OVO?
He's produced. The only thing he's ever produced is for is Drake.
Okay.
So like that's when I say we're like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's not a.
All right. I'll take that.
If there was a hook on Truffle Butter, or I don't know, I think that record is so like Drake doesn't stand out on that record.
I could care less about the other two on that record.
I could care less about Wayne, though people like Wayne's verse. I like Nicki's verse and I like Drake. And I've had a problem, and I said this when we reviewed the Pink Print, was that Nicki has one delivery when she raps. She's like, so lately, prior to, she used to play with her voice. And I'm not even talking about Monster, just even back in the Beam Me Up Scotty days. She used to play with her voice. She used to go really high pitch, go down, she'd growl, et cetera, et cetera. Now she's like New York rap. I'm a New York rapper.
Honestly, it might be the Meek Mill influence. Like, Meek does the same thing. Meek has one way of rapping most of the time.
He does, but when you come out, when you present yourself initially as a rapper with different styles, like Nicki did, or at least with different vocal inflections, but yeah, different styles. I'll say it, different styles. And then you kind of regress back to one general style. I think Meek, not only does Meek know who he is, I think Meek wants to be who he is.
Mm.
I think he's totally cool with, this is my lane. I'm going to yell and I'm going to be aggressive. I've been listening to Meek Mill since 2000 and 9, 10
Right.
Is when the first time I heard him. He's not, he hasn't changed.
Right. And so, you know, the real problem is like, I can't listen to a whole album of Meek Mill. I just can't.
I think that, and I'll say this because I did like the Diddy record. I did like the outro. And because it was top heavy, by the time I got to the middle of the album, the beats were okay. But if he switched up more production and he got a little more variety in his production, then I think listeners could stomach a Meek project a little better than that. But when you start getting, because that was even his problem with the Dream Chasers and the Flamers records, he would just get in with Jahlo beats, and Jahlo beats would just make him these like erratic beats. And then on top of that, this is back in the mixtape days. This is 28 tracks of these erratic beats, and you yelling at me for an hour and a half.
Right,
my ear's gonna get fatigued. So I felt like I felt like this album was good enough to catapult Meek to another place. And I think that his team had things in place for this to happen. And him and his big mouth. And he just literally shot himself in the foot. And I honestly feel bad for him. Mm. I really feel bad for him. Because especially with somebody, you sort of watch their career blossom and they're finally at a place where they are going to be a different level of success, like a J. Cole, who I think we need to talk about next. And then it's just like, your ego gets in the way or whatever happened. And now you have to start over. And there's a really good chance that you may not return to that place of prominence. You got to put out like 4 blueprints in a row. You have to be absolutely undeniable. You have to not miss. You have to be 18 of 18 from the field and not make any mistakes and shoot some game winners and dish out 10 assists, 12 assists. You need to average a triple-double at least. For 2 seasons. It's a lot for Meek to do. Can he do it? I don't know. Especially not in this culture. This, like, man, we're ruthless nowadays.
Mm.
So I don't know if even if he does it, I don't even know if the public is going to be as forgiving. Because not only did he shoot himself in the foot, you know, back-to-back happened.
Yeah, yeah. What actually really hurt him was it was all that build-up. And then whatever it was that he ended up releasing with the Undertaker music, like,
yep.
Yeah. It's why, honestly, it's even if I don't know if Drake ever had like a third song ready, but it was like, nah, yeah, didn't need it.
Yeah. He totally didn't need it.
It would have been seen as too much.
Yep. Yeah. Then Drake would have caused some backlash, like leave him alone.
Right. Leave him alone.
Yeah. Leave him alone. It's funny because I remember liking that beat when it first came out.
Oh.
And it, well, of course, it's the Undertaker. Come on. It's the
Doesn't
Undertaker.
Matter.
Shut up. So then, like, over Thanksgiving break, Jahlo Beats put out the beat. So I'm like, oh, the beat is out. So I go to listen to it, and I'm like, man, like, you can't even do anything with that beat.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. Like, that beat just sounds like defeat. It's terrible. So I feel bad for Meek, man. I really hope that Dream Chasers 4 is just like, gee, he just comes out gunning. Now, does he need to dish Drake at this point? And then let's wrap this up because we talked about this way too long.
No. And in fact, like, I know he won't do this. But one thing that I think will be interesting, like, and this is sort of a side point, but this really kind of reminds me of this. I feel like we are at the place with what you and I will call trap beats. And what we really mean are, yeah, I mean, we can call them trap beats, but it is that slower BPM everybody uses. They pitch their snares now, thanks to Young Chop. They're rolling everything. Like, there is a certain style of beat. And I feel like we are in that point of the evolution where we were with, say, soul samples in like 06 or 07.
You sound like when people were just speeding up anything.
Well, we're at the point where it's like, all right, what's the next move? And Meek's whole career has, I mean, his first, like, the first way that he like really became known on the mainstream level was I'm a Boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's never really had to exist outside of those beats.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you hear Meek Mill, you think that there's a dude yelling over trap beats. So, like, I'm of the opinion that I think it's not like it'll happen like we're going to wake up January 1st and all of a sudden there's a new style. Like, but I think we will see people attempt to do something different in 2016, because I feel like you can only get, like, when hip hop goes through trends, there's only just a finite amount of time that you can get out of a trend. Like even sped up soul samples, which people still use like soul samples and stuff like that today. But I'm talking like, if you think about it, think like, okay, so there was what, Dynasty in 2000, and then of course mm-hmm. Blueprint. But like even all that, like that's 01, that's, excuse me, 2000, 2001. But like even Kanye by like 2005 was like, all right, I'm trying something different. And the sound, and like people were still using that, but like you start to see new kind of stuff. And then right around that time it was like, oh, and what's this 74 BPM DJ Tomb style? You know what I mean? Like things change. Like all I'm saying is the trends change. And I feel like the evolution, like trap beats, they are, man, there's only so many places. There's, what are they going to do? Go to 40 BPMs? Like they're running out of places to go, you know? Yeah. So like, I don't think Meek will do this, but I think for him, it would be interesting to simply try something different, because yeah, his whole image is like, he's an aggressive dude who's going to yell at you, but it is true. But like, and the problem with that though, is there's a whole percentage of people out here who look at him as someone who lost against Drake, which is a real problem as long as he wants to maintain that image. So it's really a question of, can he walk away from that image and just be like, whatever, and just keep it moving? Or will he continue to feel like he has to, like, it's like a scab. He's just going to keep picking at it, thinking that's going to make it better.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right.
I agree. So let's talk about an artist who, much like Meek, sort of evolved into a place of prominence and success. And largely in the eyes of the public, he did a lot of things right, and that's J. Cole. So,
really? I'm still not in on the J. Cole experience. What did I miss?
So, Forest Hills Drive came out at the end of December, right?
Yep.
And he pretty much, did he have a hit record?
No.
No, he had a, what's the name of that record? No. It's like, because I heard it on the radio. It's the Hands in the Air.
Nah, that record?
Yeah. I heard that record on the radio a lot this year. So Cole right now, and I don't know if you've watched it, he's doing these documentaries, and they've spaced them out weekly on HBO. Yeah. And they're actually really, really good. But you and I seem to be the only ones who don't like this album.
There are a lot of people who are not all in on the J. Cole experience, so I'm totally okay with that.
So here's my thing.
Okay.
This is what happened to me this weekend. I finally found out what it is about J. Cole and me.
Okay.
So my nephews were listening to a lot of J. Cole this weekend. I let them sort of, you know, play the soundtrack on the drive up. And they were playing some, you know, some Forest Hill Drive and a few other joints. I was like, yo, have y'all heard the Warm Up? Have y'all heard Friday Night Lights? They said no. So I played it for them. And I realized that J. Cole has not changed as an artist. Mm. He has evolved into his style. We talked about J. Cole's records being sleepy, bad drums, yada, yada, yada. That didn't go away. That's always been there. I'm like, oh. And so what it made me do is it made me appreciate the fact that he has evolved into, well, it's made me do two things. It's made me appreciate into the artist that he's become now. And it makes me, Forest Hills Drive made me look more fondly on Born Sinner. Mm. Born Sinner, it's amazing how when you go through somebody's catalog, you hear the latest album and you go back and hear one before. Sort of like what we do with Drake and Nothing Was the Same, where it wasn't quite where he is now, but you could tell that there were some changes and he was getting ready to, you know, turn a corner on something.
Right.
You can hear that in Born Sinner. So honestly, you're not going to hear a whole lot of slander from me out of J. Cole. I just realized that he's always been doing this. He's just singing a lot more. His songwriting has gotten way better. And that's just what it is. So I'm still not a fan of Forest Hills Drive, but as somebody who for a long time really wanted J. Cole to just be like this artist, I think that I built that up in my head and made him be something that he wasn't. And I'll take the blame for that.
Yeah. I think the problem with Forest Hills Drive is that Kendrick came out. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all I have to say about that. Like, to me, Kendrick does all the things that J. Cole is good at and more. They don't, like, yeah. that's kind of a problem, you know?
Yeah.
And there's always a battle for attention when you release music. I mean, in a weird way, like, it's not quite the same thing, but, like, Big Sean suffered the same problem this year, where, like, I actually like his album, It's got some good songs on it. But like once Drake came out with If You're Reading This, because that came out right after that, right?
I thought it came out before.
Did it come out before?
I thought so.
All right, then my theory's wrong. But like I feel like the overlap between Big Sean and Drake fans, there's a lot of overlap there. So like if Drake's having a big spring, it's tougher. It's tough for Big Sean to have a big spring at the same time. Now he did and it kind of worked out, but you know what I mean? Like I feel like some artists just inhabit the same space of fans. Like they share a lot of fans, so they're, you know, fans are only gonna have so many favorites at the same time. And Forest Hills, you know, 2014 Forest Hills Drive, you know, he did the performance on Letterman. People were really like, oh, J. Cole's become more conscious, everything else.
Be Free is a dope record.
What's that?
Be Free was a dope record.
No, it was. It was. But I'm saying that comes out and there's a sort of narrative building about J. Cole, but then Kendrick just comes through and like all the same people who were paying attention to J. Cole from that. Now all of a sudden they're like, oh, Kendrick Lamar. You know what I mean?
That's a really interesting point because I think Cole's perspective on what was going on in our culture was outside looking in.
Yes.
In terms of, I'm out here with, I see what's going on amongst my people and this is my response. And Kendrick's was more inside looking out.
No, they're not the same at all.
Yeah. No. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is just it's interesting how they tackled the same two things from two totally different perspectives. And it's amazing that inside looking out, with that has come a lot of, it's too heavy. It's too much.
Oh, well,
I have to be in the right headspace.
No, that has to do with the production choices that he made, which we will talk about when we get to our top 10.
You think that's solely production?
I totally think it's solely production.
You don't think that's content?
Do you think it's any accident that the song that everybody comes back to is All Right?
No, but I'm saying that's not the only thing.
I think it's a major part. I think that, no joke, it is like, it's the spoonful of sugar problem. Like, if you're going to do something serious with your vocal, if you're going to have challenging content, then you got to give people a reason to listen. It's why, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. You know, like, it's why All Right. I mean, All Right works for a variety of reasons, but it's one of the reasons why All Right works.
Yeah. I get that. I understand. We'll wait.
You and I arguing about this is going to become the new Yeezus argument where we're just going to argue about it for the next 12 months.
It really is.
You know who we haven't talked about at all? And I want to talk about him now because I'm afraid, although I don't know your list, I don't know how much we're going to talk about in the second half. He might not have put out my favorite music this year, but I feel like we would be doing him a disservice to not at least talk about Future for a second.
I thought we talked about a lot of Future. You talking about not talking? We haven't talked about him today.
I'm saying if we're gonna talk about 2015, I think you have to talk about Future.
Hey, real quick side note: Eagles fired Chip Kelly.
Wow. We can switch gears, make this an NFL podcast real quick.
I've watched no football this year, other than whatever.
You haven't watched football. I've been trying to do an NBA podcast.
I know. I'm fine. I'm gonna get league pass in the next few weeks. I promise. Oh. Scouts on.
Then you know what's gonna happen. Now I'm gonna get the text at like 9:30 at night. Yo, turn on this game. That's what's gonna happen.
Nah, I won't be like that. I'm never at home to watch TV anyway, so it's really just me giving the NBA $150 for like once. Like Friday night is probably the only night that I get to sit home and not do anything. Other than that,
Fire Chip Kelly.
Fire Chip Kelly, son.
They still have a game this weekend.
I mean, you know.
Wow. They're not wasting any time. All right. Future Hendrix.
Anyway, so Future Hendrix. I'm just a battle rapper. I'm sorry. You just a battle rapper. I'm an official trapper. Jibber jabber. That might be the line of the year. Very close. Everybody likes the Gucci flip-flops line. No, no, no. Battle rapper, official trapper, jibber jabber. Always does it for me. Anyway, but Future.
It's because he rhymes official trapper with jibber jabber.
It's glorious. It's poetry.
For me, Future overdid it this year. Like, I'm good. I know that he is the hipster rap fan du jour, like, of the moment. Like, he is the guy. Oh, Future. Yeah, what a year for Future. Yeah, he put out a lot of records. A lot of them sound the same to me. Like, I realize that makes me sound very old, and I'm okay with that. Like, to me, like, I think people are overstating how much this year was about him because I think in a sense, we can give it the Drake stimulus package check. Like, test, there's a lot of future stimulus package records out there. We've talked about them on so many albums this year. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was one I can't remember. What was I listening to where I was like, oh, look, it's the, oh, the Vince Staples. Was it Vince Staples? No. What record was it? There was some other record that came out on that I knew came out on Def Jam. And all of a sudden I was like, oh yeah, there's a Drake stimulus Drake package on it.
Right?
But even before that, like from earlier in the year.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, there's another one. And I was like, you know, listening to the Games album. I was like, oh, there's another one. None of these future records that he's doing for other people, nobody likes them really. Mm. Like, he's churning out mediocre stuff. And he's had some records this year. I'm not going to deny any of that. Although, I'm not really that big on March Madness, even though people really like it. To me, like, my favorite future record of the year is probably Where You At.
I like them both. I really like March Madness, but I like Where You At too.
But to me, I can't tell if it's a situation where, like, I feel like media people do this all the time, where they sort of all coalesce around, this is the person we're going to talk about this year. And I feel like Future is that person. I don't know if he really earned it. I don't know if all the music he put out this year was really that good. Frankly, and this is going to make me sound really hipster, I like the old Future.
That's super.
Give me where so like, hipster. But you know what? Like, give me Mike Will and Future. Like, that is the Future I like. I think we're probably the only, like, this is probably, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and take a guess for you. This might be the only, like, podcast or whatever talking about a top 10 list where nobody has DS2 in their top 10.
Yeah.
So I know you're
do
not.
Do we do that every year? Not, and I don't mean we as in Clock Radio Speakers. I mean we, like, is there just some guy or artist who sort of the journalists or the hipsters or whatever, so they rally around and, like, this is our guy, and then he blows up and he has a great year, and then the next year, like, is solid, like, he has a good story. Do we do that?
I feel like my instinct wants to tell me that's true, but now I'm sitting here thinking of examples and I'm not sure if I can find one. You know what? I feel like there are other artists, maybe they haven't blown up as much as Future, but that, like, if you listen to the media, this is somebody who I'm supposed to pay attention to. Like, so this is a good time to talk about it because it's not in my top 10. Like, no matter how hard I try, I listen to Joey Badass's music and I'm just like, you sound like somebody who could not get a record deal in the 90s. That is not a compliment.
Big Daddy Kane had a song called How You Get a Record Deal.
Like, what's crazy to me is that many of the people who I see advocating for his music are our age. They grew up in the 90s. And now when I hear people who are our age or in our age bracket say stuff like that, I'm like, I'm starting to, like, reevaluate how I feel. Like, I'm like, I can't even trust their opinion. Like, you can't tell the difference between this and music that was actually dope from the 90s.
It has, again, it's what it, I think for somebody like that, it's what it represents. Mm. It has all the elements. Sample, jazz record, breakbeat, it's a certain tempo. He's rappity rapping, you know. I think it sounds like cold weather music, sounds like Bubble Goose music. You
it's
know what
all, all the details are off though. Like, I went back and I wanted to, when I press play, make it sound like I got a cassette deck. When I tapped play on my phone, when I re-listened to his album the other day, I was like, I actually was sitting there like, I was like, you know what? Maybe this will be the time. I'm like, maybe I'll finally, like, I'm ready for Joey Badass. Mm-hmm. And then I'm listening to it. And granted, we nitpick. That's why we have a show. But it's like, it's like a knockoff. You look at it from a distance. Everything kind of is right. You get up close. And once you notice that one thing's not right, all of a sudden you're like, oh, this logo's not the right thing. And this is wrong. And this is wrong. And this is wrong. And this is, that's how I feel about Joey Badass's music. Like, in like, you hear it from, like, far away. You're like, oh yeah, this sounds like 90s music. Then you actually pay attention and you're like, no, this isn't right at all. That's how I feel about his music.
I feel that.
So maybe not. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, so all that as a response to your thing about Future, maybe you're right. Maybe it is a case where I just don't really like Future, but I do feel like even if it's not somebody who's had as big of a year of Future, I do feel like the media will sort of rally around people. It's like, oh, this is somebody who you need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Like another example this year, Vince Staples.
Vince Staples kind of had an Azealia Banks-esque year.
She's a great example.
I heard 212 the other day.
Yeah.
And I really like 212.
212 is really good.
But, like, nobody cares because, like, she basically tweeted herself out of a career. And Vince Staples sort of did some other things, too, in a similar way, where he's not necessarily tweeting himself out of a career, but he's more so getting known for what he says on social media versus his music, because his music is dope. Like, he can rap. Mm. He can rap.
I actually don't think the music he makes is really that good.
I'm shocked.
His album had a really bizarre sound to me. It's like, you know, it's mostly No ID with a little bit of DJ Dahi and Clams Casino. Like, but it sounds like he basically got no, I think I even said this when we reviewed the album. He basically got No ID to do like a sort of weird interpretation of the beats on Hell Hath No Fury. Mm. Like that sort of that era of Neptunes. Mm. And it just doesn't work for me at all. There are some records that are good on it. Like Jump Off the Roof is dope. Yeah, that's the one. I like.
All right.
But do you know, does that make any sense to you? Like, I feel like the media all sort of, when the album came out and even afterwards, like, it's like, oh, Vince Staples. And it's just like, he put out a double disc project. I mean, granted, combined, it's only the length of one album, but like, all right. So it's 20 tracks. Some of them are short, but so let's say he put out a full length project. When I listen to it, I'm just like, no, like this just isn't really good. Am I crazy?
I don't know. I honestly don't remember that project.
Yeah.
All right. But I mean, it came out in like February. So that's why I don't remember it. Not because it wasn't amazing. It was one of those ones where like it came out.
It came out in June.
Oh. Well, there's that.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was one of those things where like, I don't know. I don't know. Okay. Is there anybody else's project that you listen to? What about ASAP?
I'm going to save him for the second half.
Okay.
Because I listened to it for a third time this afternoon and I changed my opinion. Mm. Some albums you can listen to on your little iPhone earbuds and some ones you can't.
Yeah. Agreed. Mm. Agreed. You know that. You got to take it to different places. You got to take it to different places. As crazy as the weather's been this winter, you know, take it out on a nice day. Take it out when it's raining / snowing out. You know what I'm saying? Like you got to switch it up.
So for you, was there, when you went back and listened to some stuff, was there anything that jumped out at you that didn't make your list, either good or bad? Like just something that you're like, oh, or you had higher hopes? Or
I'll save the good for side B, because I've got some honorable mentions. I'm trying to think off top. What? I don't remember.
Okay. So nothing that really sticks out.
I think I got, because with my end of the year list, like, yeah, nothing really sticks out, but I think Big Sean's album was better than I remember it being.
Agreed.
I wanted that, what was it, the intro or something like that? One of those records that he leaked on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
Stupid. Record was stupid. I think Wale's album was really interesting because he almost over executed his theme.
Oh yeah, I had I went back and listened to that, and the Seinfeld stuff. So this is gonna sound dumb. Seinfeld just doesn't feel hip hop to me. I know that's a dumb statement in 2015. Anything can be hip hop, right? But like, it just it just doesn't work. I can't. Yeah. I couldn't put my, like, you hear it and it's just, there's too much of it. It was weird. It was just weird.
I think with artists like Wale, and I can even take the L for that because of like what Kairo is like. Sometimes you're in your head so much, you sort of over communicate an idea that you could have easily said in one sentence.
Well, but
you stretch it out. And I think that's what Wale does with his music sometimes. I think he says the same thing. He says one thing 12 different ways.
So in your defense, Kairos was dealing with some weightier themes than Wale is. Wale is taking a simple idea, a simple concept, and banging you over the head with it. Right. If it's a complicated thing, you kind of have to bang people over the head with it. To Pimp a Butterfly is a great example of that. On your first listen through, I remember this. I was like, all the little snippets at the end of certain songs that you end up hearing the whole, they sort of built, or like, you're like, what is this from? And you're like trying to keep track of it, and it's too much going on almost. But once you know how it ends, when you listen back, it almost sticks out like, wow, he was really banging this over the head of people.
Yeah.
Once you know what to look for. But that first listen through is, you know, the word of the year, it was a challenging listen. You know, like.
Was it a challenging listening, or are we just getting stupider?
Just going to leave that out there.
We'll get to that when we talk about
We're going to talk about Butterfly. Yeah. We will. Anything else? Anything else stick out to you?
I know. Oh, you said this off air that you wanted to talk about the absence of one Kanye West.
The absence of one Kanye West.
Who... Shout out to second pair of Yeezys this week. Holla in the building. Anyway,
I think you were, with regard to his fashion, you were right on that he was a little too early.
He's a little too early, even for me, because now, like, I love his low. I love the low tops. I love the 350s. Those are dope. 750s, nah. But I'm starting to see more and more people with, they call it oversized, but it's like oversized, but it's fitted.
Yeah.
By this time next year, it's going to be everywhere. Once it hits H&M and Gap, it's old.
Right. Nah, the expensive homeless man look is, I'm already seeing it pop up random Instagram places, and I'm like, oh, yeah. No.
Instagram. Sackcloths with sleeves in it.
Derelict, as we have put it on the show over and over again.
Yeah, man. People, you get the potato sack from the father son three legged sack race. You know what I'm saying? You get done. You flip that joint upside down. You cut two holes on the side. You cut a hole at the top. Put your head through. Put a t-shirt underneath it. Boom, pow. $800.
Don't forget, you gotta have the boots too.
Listen, fam. Okay, let me say this. Those 950s, like not the high tops, but those boots.
Yeah.
Those are glorified army boots, okay?
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with that because I've actually seen some people wear the desert boots in a way that would make me want to wear them. So no slander there. I'm seeing them on Instagram and these dudes are wearing like sweat shorts with them. No. Nah. No, you're not wearing military. You're not wearing, because, okay, let me tell you something about somebody who was in the military before. Mm. Whenever you would see the guy who would wear his civilian clothes with his military boots, you stayed away from him.
Something's not right.
That was a dangerous guy.
He's probably got some guns in the back of his car.
Absolutely. Underneath the car,
yes.
Underneath the seat in the glove compartment, there's a secret compartment. Oh, God, he has gun rooms in his house.
He's a little unhinged. He's probably got a survival plan.
Absolutely. And he's got a high and tight. The only haircut. He might have a buzz.
He's totally got a high and tight.
He's got a high and tight. He might have the buzz, but he doesn't have like the buzz you have. Like you have a clean buzz.
Yeah, no.
He has the basic training, like trainee, sit in the chair.
Might have the flat top in the Air Force. Flat top is, yeah. And he might have the 80s mustache too.
There's
he's white.
Pot. Are you talking about the porn stash?
No. I'm talking about like the 80s, like
the Tom Selleck joint?
A little bit.
Okay. Little Tom, but still within regs.
Yeah.
Gotta still be within regs. He's the guy who gets out but is still within regs on everything.
He wakes up. Right. You know what? His boots are a little too shiny.
Yeah, they are. They're very shiny.
Right.
He gets up at 0400 hours. Not 4 a.m. 0400 hours.
Right.
He gets up to Reveille is his alarm clock. He stands at attention. He makes his children. No, he doesn't have any children.
No.
When he talks or when he's in line at the grocery store, he stands at parade rest.
When his arms are at his side, it's still like he's got quarters in his hands. He's still got them cut perfectly.
Oh, my God. Oh, the cut. I forgot about
Yeah,
that.
We're going deep on the military nerdery here.
Woo! Boy. I'll never forget the day. I knew I was getting out, so I had senioritis, and like my before I got my car, my boy used to pick me up from the dorms and take me to work, and like Reveille came on, and I ran to the car because I didn't want to stand at attention, and this master sergeant like ran over to his car and was like, "You get out this car and you stand at attention." I was so mad. I got out so slow. So by the time I tried to like get out slow. So like by the time I get out, it's over.
You gotta adjust your pants. You gotta adjust.
Yeah, he was like, "Get out right now, Airman."
Airman.
Yeah, he pulled me. But I think that's it. Oh, I'm sorry, Kanye completely went on the rant. We went way out. All right, so the absence of Kanye minus fashion definitely made some waves in fashion with Jordan, sort of not scaling back, but definitely for the hype beasts. They're all Adidas out, and that much of that, if not all of it, is thanks to Kanye. But musically, it's been pretty quiet.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, you know, we had All Day, we had 4 or 5 seconds, but it was clear that I think All Day didn't get. I really think that he thought All Day was gonna like completely blow up, And when it didn't, they were like, well, that's interesting. I don't know. It might be that Kanye just cares more about other stuff right now. Every possibility is there for Kanye right now.
To me, it feels like it's a myriad of things. I think it's a collection of stuff.
Right.
I think he is more so focused on fashion. He's got two kids. He's gotten married. I think that the expectations. I'm sure Switch has been done like 3 or 4 times.
I'm sure it's evolved too.
Remember I tried to send you somebody played it in the club and somebody recorded it. Oh, that was terrible. It was terrible. But it was Kanye. I skimmed through enough to figure out, yeah, this really is Kanye's album, but I couldn't hear any of it.
Sure wasn't Travis Scott.
There's another guy. This is probably Detox. I wouldn't be surprised if Antidote was originally Kanye's record. Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Kanye's just giving these records away. Or if they're coming out of the sessions and they don't fit on Swish, but, you know, they sound good on the radio.
You hear the story about Travis Scott and his impact on Rihanna's album?
No, I saw an article on it, but I did not get to read it. What did it say?
Basically, he's trying to get Rihanna to, because her album's been done. But, you know, he's trying to get her towards a different sound, and basically Roc Nation is just like, yeah, Travis Scott's the guy right now. We got to listen to him. No joke. So, yeah, that's.
Don't do this. Listen, one thing about Rihanna knows how to pick records for herself. I think she does a really good job of not only picking out good singles, but also having really good album cuts that cater to her audience. And that if they come on, a guy's not necessarily going to like pull his hair out. She's not Beyonce before her last album.
Okay.
I don't want to hear a bunch of Better Have My Monies on this album. I do not.
I think you will.
Well,
I think it's a mistake.
I believe it's a mistake.
I know.
You're Rihanna. So just, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Her whole thing was going to, you know, getting all the top musicians and producers in those camps and putting out, you know, creating a song factory. Rihanna picks the best one. She sings them. She puts them out. She does successful. Why break up that routine? Why have a guy who is kind of responsible, well, who is definitely responsible for the downfall of one of the greatest musicians of our era. And I said it. And also, like, what is Travis Scott's, like, track record? You've got Rihanna, who's been out since, what, 05? She's got 10 years in this. What is this, like, her sixth album, seventh album? She has a track record. Why are we going to the hot guy? You're Madonna now.
Hmm.
I don't think Rihanna should never have to chase the trend. Rihanna is the trend.
I was going to say, it sounds as though, I mean, I hope this is not the case, but it's almost like it sounds like they're underestimating how big Rihanna really is.
It sounds like it.
You know, like, no, that's not the sound you really want to go. If it, you know, Bitch Better Have My Money, like that record is actually, that was too narrow.
Yeah.
But you know, I think part of the problem too is like, if she goes bigger, now she's trying to out Beyonce at Beyonce.
Is she?
Well, what's the other lane for her? She's not really a great singer, so she's not going to like win on her voice. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think she's a bad singer.
I didn't say she was bad, but like, so I'm thinking like, if you think about like where her like sound could go, or like the types of songs that she could make, like if she goes any more pop, then she's basically trying to make Beyonce records, right?
I don't necessarily know. I don't necessarily know if that's true.
Okay.
I don't know if she necessarily go. I think Beyonce and Rihanna, I think that their paths were crossing in the B-Day / or the Sasha Fierce /
Agreed.
I think that they're two totally different artists. I heard somebody say something that Beyonce's album, this last one, was pulling more off of Rihanna just because of the sexuality and the raunchiness that was in it.
Maybe.
I didn't necessarily detest that argument. That makes sense. I think they're two totally different artists. It's interesting because here we go. I tweeted about this last week. I went through Mariah Carey's entire discography.
I'm so sorry.
No. It was really interesting.
Okay.
Number one, I realized that the first Mariah Carey album that I heard was The Emancipation of Mimi all the way through. I also realized that was Butterfly the one that had Honey on it?
Yeah.
They like that album was like all singles.
Yeah.
That album was all I forgot all about all singles. And all singles were like fire too. But it was funny because prior to that album, her albums were single heavy and like her album cuts were terrible.
Yeah.
They weren't good. She was a single artist. Up until that album, which she, I think she did a lot with like the Hitmen and Puff and all that stuff and et cetera, et cetera. So it was really interesting that like Mariah now is whatever. What's the point I'm trying to make? Like Mariah had to decide what she was going to be. And she had this really interesting, unique voice, but she also, you know, wanted to thug it out. And she never quite married it. She did that one time on Butterfly. But after that, she didn't really marry the thuggery with, you know, sort of her pop image correctly. Rihanna seems like she's at a crossroads, but it's an unnecessary crossroads. Maybe it's a crossroads because the climate has changed, not necessarily she has. I don't think she's declined musically. I think that things are different now. So maybe the fear with Roc Nation is because things are different, do we have to conform to what's different so we can all be the same? Or can Rihanna just keep doing what she's doing and be fine? Because I'm sure they're looking at the two or three records that they put out and they really didn't do anything. And they're like, wait a minute. They may be panicking a little bit, but I think that panic is unnecessary.
Because the thing for her is like, I imagine her budget's got to be so big that it's like, it's not enough to have a song that plays on the radio all the time. Like when you're at Rihanna's level, if it's not a smash, you don't put it out, right?
Yeah, I think especially like your first single.
Yeah.
You got to hit it out the park.
Right. Honestly, somewhat, you know, not that all dissimilar from Kanye, right? I mean, All Day amazingly is nominated for a Grammy, right? And it was, you know, people heard it. Like it's not like it's not like Nicki Minaj Massive Attack, like it didn't bomb. Right.
I forgot about that. Where is Sean Gere? It's over here. It's over for dudes with muscles and mohawks. It's a wrap for you.
Are they wearing the fitted thermal long sleeve? I feel like they are.
I don't know, but I feel like they pop lock really well. Pop lock. Like it's just to the point where it's awkward. Anywhere and they wear like slip on like boat shoes with no laces.
For Kanye, if like, if it's not an amazing record, like they have to wait, they might be, you know, they might be searching for, it'd be interesting, right? It'd be when the project finally comes out, it'd be interesting if like, if it's evolved over time or if it's really that most of it has been sitting and they've just been waiting for the right single.
It's very hard to say.
Right.
Maybe they're not waiting on the right single. Maybe they're waiting on the right time.
No, I don't think so. I think, I mean, cause even though they weren't huge in terms of like how much they sold, like those two records off of Yeezus, right? Black Skin, the ones he did on SNL, New Slaves and Black Skinhead. That was like a little moment for Kanye.
That was a moment. That
right. So moment. He needs a, right. Maybe it's not so much about the right single as it is about the right moment, which is to me is different than the right time to release it. Like you got to have records to make the moment.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't think he's got the records to make the moment, then yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say on side A?
Nah, I think we've said a lot, but it feels like there's a lot more to cover. But
well, we've got a lot. We got some projects to talk about.
Yeah, we've got to go with our list. So maybe we'll cover those things when we talk about our list.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for side A of this week's episode. Catch us on side B on collectreducespeakers.com.
We hope you enjoyed side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.